Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
Welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet, online and on KBIA. I'm Reuben Stern. Next Monday, the Columbia City Council is expected to revisit the issue of new boundaries for City Council wards. For months now, proposed maps have been drawn and redrawn to even out the number of people living in each of the six City Council districts. Four potential plans are still in the running. What might normally be a bureaucratic process has taken some interesting public turns. Proposed maps have come not only from an appointed committee, but also from a group of citizens, and even from one of the city council members. Residents of several neighborhoods that might be affected have organized in opposition to some of the proposals, and after a contentious meeting just Friday afternoon, a group of residents appear to be launching an effort to recall 4th Ward Councilman Daryl Dudley over his support of the contentious proposal known as Trial D. It's all enough to confuse even the people who've been following the issue closely. Today, we hope to provide you a little clarity about what is going on with Columbia's redistricting and what it all means for the future of the city. With me in the studio, first, Andrew Denny is a reporter for the Columbia Daily Tribune who has been covering the reapportionment issue. Welcome, Andrew Denny.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on the program. Also with us is Karen Miller. She's a reporter for the Columbia Missourian who has also been covering the issue. Welcome, Karen Miller.
Thanks.
And finally, in the studio, we have Carl Scala. He is a former city council member. He represented the 3rd Ward of Columbia. Welcome, Carl Scala.
Pleasure to be here.
Glad to have all of you with us today. We hope that you and our audience will also join in the conversation. What questions or ideas do you have about the realignment of the city council wards? Give us a call. Our phone number, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And let's start with this question. Andrew, what's going on here? Why are people so up in arms over this issue?
Well, there's no simple answer to that question, actually. What's going on here is, as you put very simply, we're trying to even out the populations of the city's six wards. And some of the proposed maps, what's causing a lot of the furor among residents is a few of the maps have been cast as attempts to politically gerrymander the city, to move, to shift certain types of voters into certain wards to, well, as they say, dull some political opposition to some council members who may or may not try for re-election in 2013.
Karen, is that the crux of it? Are there other things?
Yeah, brewing? I mean, a lot of it, a lot of people's argument is that it's just a geographical or population kind of issue, but people are very attached to their neighborhoods and things like that. I mean, you definitely look at a lot of the reaction comes from neighborhoods not wanting to be split up or not moved to a different ward or not wanting to have different representation. But like Andrew said, when it comes down to it, it's evening out the population.
Okay. Why don't we do this real quickly, maybe walk through their four plans that are on their way to the council, right? And they've all got letters. They've gone through practically the whole alphabet by now. but at this point, it's A and B and D and E, right? Those are the four plans. Well, let's walk through them. We can go alphabetically here. Plan A, what would that do exactly? You guys, do you remember? I mean, do you have this offhand?
Sure. Plan A was the initial plan. It was offered with Plan B, and Plan B was recommended by the committee to be shown, and then they both came out. But Plan A essentially is the existing configuration right now, but the change being the addition of the Benton Stevens neighborhood into Ward 1. And then there was another subsequent change in order to balance the numbers on the north side of Ward 3 to include some of Ward 2 into Ward 3. Right. And essentially, it was the introduction of Benton Stevens neighborhood from Ward 3 into Ward 1 and then a change from Ward 2 into Ward 3. more simple approach, since Ward 2 is the largest, would be to reduce Ward 2 and to increase Ward 1.
Right. And so that's the problem. I mean, Ward 1 doesn't have enough people in
that's
it.
Correct.
Ward 2 has
right.
too many people in at this point. Now, one of the plans does that, right? Is it Plan B, I think?
Two plans. Plan B and Plan E both do that. They balance the numbers, and they do it as simply as possible. That is, by changing the least amount of ward boundaries. And your first question, I think, was interesting. It's both simple and complex at the same time, but I think the basic reason that people are resistant to some of these changes is just that. They're resistant to change. And any time you have to accommodate some sort of change, someone is affected. So it seems to make sense that you want to affect those neighborhoods the least. That should be the best plan.
Right. So in terms of that, I mean, so somebody's not going to be happy no matter what happens? Is that basically what you're saying?
It's not in my backyard kind of thing.
I mean, right.
Just typically, no matter – at some of the public hearings, it really didn't matter which plan. The opposition for the plan always came from someone whose boundaries were changing.
Right. Now, we've talked about Plan A and Plan B here. Plan E is the other one that takes from the second ward and puts it into the first ward.
Right.
Now, what is it that it does differently from Plan B?
It doesn't stretch east onto the first ward. It doesn't stretch that boundary. It only stretches it west into Ward 2, I think.
Well, Plan B doesn't stretch east either. It's north.
Right.
Plan B goes north
into the second ward.
Across I-70. And there are several others that cross I-70. Ward 3 and Ward 2 both do as well. But Plan B goes further north and takes from the second ward, puts into the first. Plan E just goes further west and takes from the second and puts into the fourth.
Okay.
The first.
So we've covered three of them. The last one is Plan D, and this is the one that seems to be getting most of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Plan D, what does that one do?
It'll actually annex some neighborhoods that are on the northeast side of the 4th Ward. It's going to put those into the 1st Ward. Also, like Plan A, it will put the Benton Stevens neighborhood into the 1st Ward as well. And as you can see, residents from both of these neighborhoods not exactly happy about these
plans. And what's their contention? I mean, how much of it is that they just don't want to change, and how much of it are other things that they're raising?
And there were the elections in 2010 where Mr. Scala was defeated by now Councilman Kes Poole, and the election for 4th Ward Councilman Daryl Dudley, he had actually narrowly defeated Tracy Griever Rice. These were very, very, very tight elections. Their contention is – And if you look at the vote counts, the way that they break down, these neighborhoods were actually very much in support of Mr. Scala and Ms. Griever Rice. Their contention is by moving these neighborhoods into the first ward, that any kind of re-election efforts that might be undertaken by Councilman Dudley or Kes Poole some political opposition to them might be eliminated, thereby maybe even securing a re-election bid.
I think it's fair to say that the term gerrymandering has been thrown around, and gerrymandering is really changing the boundaries for a political purpose. Now, technically, that's not illegal, but that brings up the issue of the spirit of the law and the letter of the law. And I think the reaction from the public, given that some folks assume that this is a pretty obvious attempt at blatant gerrymandering, suggests that the spirit of the law is very important in this regard. And I think that Plan D, by its very nature, takes the two areas, the Benton Stevens neighborhood and also the Stewart Road area, which tend to be the most voter active wards progressive wards in the city, and puts them in the same ward with Ward 1, thereby ultimately potentially affecting future elections for the next 10 years.
Let me just remind everyone in our audience, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about drawing new boundaries for Columbia City Council wards. With me in the studio are Columbia Tribune reporter Andrew Denny, Columbia Missourian reporter Karen Miller, and former 3rd Ward City Council Representative Carl Scala. For those of you in our audience, what questions or ideas do you have about the realignment of the City Council wards? Share your thoughts. You can give us a call at 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And if you have a question for one of our panelists, you can also call in with that. We'd like to remind you that Intersection is broadcast live every Monday at 2 on KBIA and online at kbia.org. You can join our online chat at that time by going to kbia.org and scrolling down to the link for Intersection. Plan D would combine a lot of those sort of older neighborhoods from Benton Stevens, the neighborhoods from the Old Southwest, into the central city ward. One of the arguments for that is that putting all of that together addresses some similar needs related to infrastructure, things like that. That's one of the main points that Councilman Dudley, who has been championing that Plan D, has put forth. What about that? I mean, is that a legitimate concern that people should have if they're living in these areas?
Well, personally, I think that's a specious argument. The idea that that common urban issues, for example, tend to make the representation stronger in a particular ward. The way the council really works is it's kind of an issue, a shifting coalition, issue-oriented coalition. And you need four votes to get anything accomplished, regardless of what the issue is. So if there is an urban issue, you're much better served and much better represented if you share the thoughts and the concerns of several of the council members rather than a single council member. And the Plan D tends to compact all of those that power for a council member in a single ward, and in fact, it has a paradoxical effect of isolating the representation for any given constituent.
And one argument against that has been this has been presented by Fourth Ward Councilman Dudley, and you know I'm not going to advocate either way, but one of his contentions was well. Why shouldn't, you know, if a council person doesn't have real estate downtown, why should they not care about what's happening downtown? And whether or not that's the case, it remains to be seen. But his contention is that he used an example to me before that what's going on with the Regency Trailer Park, you know, it's not in his ward, but it's something he cares about. So there's two sides to the argument, as always. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I mean, I've heard the argument that consolidating, like, the first ward to be central city and then having more suburban outer wards would change the way representation is on the council. But, I mean, that's just something I've had people talk to me about. It remains to be seen, like, when they actually reapportion the wards, if that would be what the case is.
And what are people saying in terms of the supporting it? Like, what are they saying would be the good thing from that in addition to the infrastructure stuff? Are there other arguments being made for consolidating those neighborhoods together?
Other than just the fact that their concerns would be shared, that's really the long and the short of it, as from what I've heard thus far. So,
right.
Well, I think it's fair to say. I mean, that's a fair point. I think, but concerns are shared throughout. If you're appointed or you're elected to the city council, you have ward concerns and you have city concerns, and they do transcend boundaries. On the other hand, it makes a difference as to when you are actually facing a vote, whether or not you have the support of two or three other people. You have to have four votes, and this reminds me a little bit on a congressional level. The same thing was what happened in both Kansas City and St. Louis. In that the minority candidate in that case decided to go along with the majority and essentially ensure a ward that would almost guarantee reelection. The problem is it almost also in both cases guaranteed isolation. Mm. So it effectively made that representative less effective, even though they could count on having that seat kind of being reelected to that seat. I think we face the same predicament here.
I will say there was one more argument in favor of the Trial D map. It's not gotten as much play, I would say, as the amended putting more politically engaged residents that you might find in Benton Stevens and some of those neighborhoods in the northeast corner of the 4th Ward would give the issues in the 1st Ward a little bit more of a spotlight, that you'd have a stronger council member.
That's
possibly.
That's interesting, Andrew, because in the last go-round for redistricting, that was the argument that was defeated, essentially. That is, it was a little bit different in that go-round. It just had the Stewart Road area into the proposed map, and that went down 4-3, and the reasoning against it was precisely because that ward was so active that it, in fact, may have overshadowed the real representative vote in the first ward the way it stands right now.
And he's referring, of course, to the 2001 reapportionment process when the council was considering a very similar proposal to what Trial D would do. That was called Trial 5.
And that did not go through because
it was defeated because there was a fear that the politically active voters in that particular part of the ward would dominate the political scene.
Right. And that goes back to the creation of the first ward in the first place, right? The reason that the first ward is there was to try to increase
minority representation
and access to being on the council. Mm-hmm. In terms of these areas, I mean, how different are these areas from the existing first ward?
You're talking about the neighborhoods.
Yeah, the neighborhoods that under Plan D might be lumped into the first ward. How different are they, or how similar are they?
I would say aesthetically, not much different at all. Yeah. I mean, these are older parts of the city. You know, the architecture is not going to differ much. In terms of political representation or political activism, however, that's where you're going to see the difference. The first ward's been long characterized as a voter apathetic type area. Some numbers have backed that up as well. It doesn't tell the entire story. The first ward includes a lot of students who, I mean, for all, you know, all purposes, it's kind of hard to get students who are going to be here maybe 4 years at the very most to, you know, want to register here, start participating in local elections. However, on those fringes, on the outer sides, I mean, out in Benton Stevens and some of those fourth ward neighborhoods, you have very, very politically active residents. I mean, if you go to any city meeting, you're probably going to see at least one, maybe two of them. I mean, from city council all the way down to environment and energy. So,
But this isn't only about political activism. That's part of it. Certainly that's a big part of it. But you asked the question, Ruben, about how similar or dissimilar are these areas. In fact, they do share a lot in common with the downtown area in appearance. On the other hand, I've often made the argument and continue to press the argument that that's exactly what we don't want. You don't want one ward that's all homogeneous. You want a ward that is diverse as possible. And by diversity, I'm not just talking about racial diversity, although that's a part of it, certainly. I'm talking about density, the diversity of density, whether it's less dense or more dense, or the characteristics of whether it's residential or commercial. And I submit that the community and the constituents within each ward are better served if each ward is as diverse as possible in all of those ways, rather than have any that are homogeneous. I don't think homogeneity serves representation very well.
This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we are talking about drawing new boundaries for Columbia City Council wards. With me in the studio are Columbia Tribune reporter Andrew Denny, Columbia, Missourian reporter Karen Miller, both of whom have been covering this issue. We also have with us city former Third Ward City Council Representative Carl Scala. For those of you in our audience, we hope you'll join the conversation as well. What ideas or concerns do you have about the redistricting of Columbia's City Council wards? You can give us a call. Our phone number is 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And I'd like to go ahead and take one of the calls that have already come in. We have Pat on the line. Pat, are you there?
I am.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for calling in and for joining the program today.
You're welcome. I have been active in this issue. I live in the North Central Columbia neighborhood. My question is, and I don't know the answer, and that is, when they talk about voter engagement, which I understand is one of the arguments in favor of Trial D amended. I am not in favor of Trial D amendment. But they talk about energizing voters. We have, in several of our downtown neighborhoods, a high population of college students. And if they happen to live in either Columbia College housing, Stevens College housing, or university housing, they are outside of the reach of those of us who work for our candidates we believe in during our nonpartisan city elections. We can't call them. We can't get their names. We can't go to their door. We can't send them a postcard. And unless we stood in speaker circle or some nice place on campus, we couldn't even encourage them to register to vote. So the whole idea that, and I don't know this for a fact, but I'm concerned that at one point it seemed like a really good idea to put 5,000 college students in the first ward to help equalize the population, when in fact I think it gives us a glass ceiling right from the get-go on our ability to energize voters. Do any of you have any insight on that?
Karen, you're a student.
Yeah, I have a student.
Sorry to put you on the spot there, but it is an interesting question that you've got a ward where it is this high concentration of people who are, you know, not engaged in the same way as people who own their homes or who rent their apartments in those areas.
Yeah, and it's a lot of transient voters, I would say. I think they're more interested in the university's concerns than the city, I would say, too. I mean, I don't want to make an assumption about that. But, I mean, you know, when you're a college student, like, the university is kind of your little town as opposed to in a larger city. I mean, the first ward having a majority of, like, the university students in there is, like, an issue to look at. Personally, like, I am a student, but I don't live in the first ward. But yeah, I have had people talk about saying that, like, you know, you can't go to their dorm and you can't canvass for elections and you can't, like, you can't really reach college students there, especially in dorms and
well,
places.
Well, it's certainly difficult to reach because I can remember in the last campaign, about the only effective way that we had to get to the students really was networking. And that was an early case of networking, trying to get them to work on your campaign and to talk to each other and so on and so forth. But notoriously, the students have very low voter turnout and typically they are kind of forgotten in many of the elections, except when it comes to redistricting to balance the numbers. Then they have some significance, unfortunately.
Right. Andrew, do you have thoughts on that question of the first ward and the makeup with all the students in it?
I kind of wanted to piggyback a little bit about what was said about the campus issues being kind of our own little bubble. And this is something, actually, I was a J school student myself, that they encouraged us a lot at the Missourian to break out of your campus bubble and find out. I'm sure you've heard that term thrown around quite a bit. And it's hard a lot of times for students that are, like, as I mentioned before, maybe going to be here 4 years to really see what kind of impact local issues are going to have. However, I think it would be unrealistic to assume that what happens at the local level doesn't affect students. Right now what's going on in the city, even we're looking at students to find ways to restructure our bus system. Mm-hmm. And exactly. The proposals even – well, the selling point even now is maybe to try and get them to pay a higher student fee to help prop up the bus system and maybe make it something that caters to them. So is there a problem getting students engaged? Yes, but should they be engaged? Well, I think they might be remiss if they don't start paying attention to some local issues.
Okay. Pat, does that answer your question?
It does. It helps.
Okay.
The other thing that where you still can get to them, in the 6th Ward, there's a high number of apartment complexes along Old 63. And even though there's no solicitation signs there, a volunteer for a nonpartisan campaign could go in there. You might be asked to leave. And I know there's a high number of students that live there, but the whole idea about let's balance the population with students, not recognizing the impact that has, concerns me because I worked hard to increase voter turnout in the last election. I gave up working for a particular candidate in favor of that. And in the first ward, we did have low voter turnout in the last election.
Okay. Pat, thanks for calling in, joining the conversation. I just want to bring in a couple things from the chat room, a comment from Jeremy. The affected neighborhoods, ostensibly these ones that would be moved into the first ward from the fourth ward, I believe, he's referring to here, have a higher income, higher voter participation, higher single-family rates, so more people owning their own homes, single-family houses as opposed to apartments. And he says the only thing they truly have in common with the first ward is high support for Democratic candidates. What do you think of that?
Well, I would say, I mean, that's a great point that, yes, more politically engaged residents, you're going to find a lot of those attributes. You're going to find a better level of education, better income, better housing situations, things of that sort. But I would say that, I mean, there might be a little bit more in common, I guess, with the first ward other than just high Democratic turnout. But, I mean, I could be incorrect on that. But there certainly is a similar political leaning.
Frankly, there's even a big difference between the Stewart Road area and the Benton Stevens neighborhood. So there are differences even within these two areas that he was referring to.
Okay. We have another caller on the line. Mike is on the phone. Mike, are you with us?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for joining the program and calling in today.
Thank you for having the program. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you great. Thanks.
Okay, great. There was a problem with the line earlier. I would caution against what I think has been an inaccurate narrowing of this debate to the re-elections of certain candidates, and in this case, the candidates being in the 4th Ward, Daryl Dudley, and in the 3rd Ward, Gary Kespole. I think that's an inaccurate description of what's driving this debate, that somehow people opposed to Trial D want to make sure that Gary Kespole is not reelected or that Daryl Dudley is not reelected in favor of some other candidate. In several cases, Mr. Scala's name has come up. I think that's very inaccurate because most of this, as I've seen it, has been driven by historical voting trends and also actually stark differences in the first and fourth wards, that people in the fourth ward, and I think also in the third ward, see as things that they are
Mikey just dropped out there on us.
Our city, probably one of the most, if not
Mike,
the most.
Mike, we just lost a little bit of what you were saying there for a second.
Okay.
So if you could go back a few words and bring
okay.
us back.
Okay. Well, in any event, I think trying to narrow this to the re-elections of a couple of individuals is inaccurate. I don't think it describes what this is about at all. And I see it again appear in the Trib today where Rob Monzies, who devised Trial D, is saying that the people that are opposed to his Trial D are leading an effort to demonize Daryl Dudley. That's just ridiculous.
So
what
would you say is driving this then, Mike? I mean, you've written about this on your blog, investigated this issue and highlighted this for a lot of people. What's your assessment of what's driving this then?
Historic voter trends that go well beyond and well in back of the recent, I mean, this is just the 2010 election. The voter trends in these neighborhoods have definitely been progressive. They've been for a variety of progressive candidates over many decades, not just the last year or two. That would be one of those things. The second thing is that people in the third and fourth wards who would be affected by Trial D honestly believe that the representatives they send to the council support first ward issues more more generally and more routinely than less progressive candidates would do. So all the people in these central city neighborhoods affected by Trial D believe, looking at Trial D, that it would reduce our representation on the city council by a net 2 votes because it would eliminate Benton Stevens, much of the old Southwest, and some other peripheral neighborhoods from the mix of neighborhoods that send progressive candidates who generally support central city issues to the Columbia City Council. Mr. Dudley and Mr. Kespel are really just, they are very recent examples of, a shifting trend, but they do not represent, I don't think, anything historical here, and I think it's a mistake to say that this debate is based entirely on their re-election efforts. It's
right.
not.
Okay, so that kind of gets to a comment from the chat room, a question from Sam in the chat room. Who exactly is in favor of Plan D besides Daryl Dudley, who's been sort of the council member most visible on this? Had that come out in terms of who is behind this?
There was one person from the public that was named, and that was John Clark. And he played a role in the 10 years ago in redistricting in the plan that was defeated. So he supports Plan D. And obviously there was some support on the reapportionment committee for Plan D because they tied 4-4 for that plan. The only majority support to plan was Plan E. That was 5-3.
Right.
And Councilman Dudley did point out at Friday's meeting that Councilman Kespel has also expressed his support for. And actually, he had told me that himself.
That's
I
true.
I talked to him for a story before. So where exactly the rest of the council members are at now, it's hard to say.
We're going to have to cut to a break real fast here. So I'm going to go ahead and just take us into that. We're continuing our conversation here on Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about drawing new council boundaries for Columbia City Council wards. Joining me in the studio are Andrew Denny, a reporter for the Columbia Daily Tribune, who has been covering the issue, former 3rd Ward Council member Carl Scala, and also a reporter from the Columbia Missourian, Karen Miller, who has also been covering this issue. For those of you who are in our audience, we'd love to have you join this conversation. You can give us a call at 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. We're going to take a break, but we'll continue this conversation after the break, and we hope that you'll stick around. And welcome back. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about drawing new boundaries for Columbia City Council wards. With me in the studio are Columbia Tribune reporter Andrew Denny, Columbia Missourian reporter Karen Miller, and former Third Ward City Council Representative Carl Scala. For those of you in our audience, what ideas or concerns do you have related to the new council boundaries and the proposals that are being put forth for that? You can share your thoughts by giving us a call at 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. We have a caller on the line. Caller, are you there?
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for joining the program today.
Yes, I was under the impression that Councilman Dudley was going to be there today. What happened?
We had anticipated that he would join the conversation, and he was not able to make it to the studio today.
Okay. Well, I also wanted to make people aware I live in the 4th Ward, and I am against the amended Proposition 4. I wanted to let people know that there has been a petition initiative organized for the removal of Mr. Dudley. So I would encourage people to start watching for ways to sign the petition.
Okay. Thank you for your call and for joining the conversation today, Deanna from Columbia, 4th Ward. Now, that arose out of the meeting on Friday, right? You were there,
yeah.
Andrew?
Yeah.
What happened? How did a meeting to inform constituents turn into a budding recall effort?
I'd heard there was a bit of a rumor going around the 4th Ward that some residents there had been looking into that anyway. As I'd mentioned before, the race was very tight between Mr. Dudley and Tracy Griever Rice. And what had happened, that was actually a four-way race in which Ms. Griever Rice and Sarah Reed had split something like 50% of the vote. Councilman Dudley won with about 36%. With those kinds of conditions, there might be some unhappy voters. But it was sort of thrown out in the middle of this meeting, and former 4th Ward Representative Rex Campbell was actually there. He had started to inform, you know, well, if we want to do this, we need to fill out a petition. I did a little legwork myself and found that roughly 5,000 voters voted in the 2010 election that put Councilman Dudley in his seat. Something in the neighborhood of it's 30% of those voters need to fill out a petition in order to have a recall election set up, which I think was something around 1,200, I believe.
I think so. Like how many signatures for the 30%? I thought it was like 1,520.
It might be more like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, somewhere in that range, and yeah, that's.
And so what would happen? I mean, so they have to gather a bunch of signatures, yeah. And then what happens?
Well, what'll happen is if they get enough signatures, it'll go to the city clerk, and then she'll present it to the council without delay. The charter says, and then the council will have to vote for a recall election. Like they will hold a recall election, I believe, is what has to happen.
They just have to
have votes, but it has to be presented to the city council to say.
They just have to agree on a date, pretty much.
Yeah, and it's the early. I think it's usually the earliest election upcoming, which I think would be in November.
And is it just that ward that votes in something like that, or is it a citywide vote?
I think it's just the ward because the signatures have to be people who could vote.
Right.
Which is interesting because I've been wondering if the signatures that would be gathered right now, they would be in the 4th Ward. But after the redistricting goes through, would some of those people who signed it no longer be in the 4th Ward?
Another layer of complexity on something that's already swirling in complexity.
There's a new layer of complexity.
It's my understanding that would be kind of be grandfathered. So the right. Changes would not take place until the if this was resolved.
Right. Has this happened before? I mean, has
a
council
petition?
There's been a recall
once many, many years ago. And I forget
1990? It was a Chester Edwards.
Chester Edwards.
And he was recalled. He was 5th Ward, and he was recalled for he supported a student apartment development called Fox Point, and people were upset and called a recall.
And did it happen? Did he get recalled?
He did. He was replaced by Carl Cruz.
And when did you say that was?
1999. And he was recalled in 1990 and was replaced in 1991. It would be two separate elections. Mm-hmm. There would be the recall and then a vacancy on the council, mm-hmm. and then an election for the vacancy.
Right. Okay, we have another caller on the line who actually wants to talk about this. Dan, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thanks for joining the program and calling in today.
Well, thanks for having the program.
Yeah.
I'm involved with the petition to recall Ward Council member Daryl Dudley, and we've actually got a petition together, and the petitioning will begin tomorrow. And on this Thursday at the library in the Friends Room B, from 3:15 to 4:15, we're having a meeting we're going to organize a street-to-street canvas within the 4th Ward. And the contact phone number, if somebody can't make that meeting but wants to participate or get more information, is 808-3850, and that's Jeanette. When you call, you can ask for Jeanette, and she'll be able to help you with that.
Okay.
So our goal is to, I think we need about 1,600 registered voters in the 4th Ward, but we're shooting for 2,000 signatories, and then as soon as we get that, we're going to submit it to the city clerk and let it go from there.
And Dan, why are you all pushing for a recall?
Well, I think most of the issues have already been covered, so I would be somewhat redundant, but I could read to you, if you'd like, the we have 5 bullet points, I guess, on the petition that, which pretty much outlines the issues as far as we're concerned.
I mean, are they all related to this redistricting thing, or are there other grievances?
Yeah, they are related to the redistricting thing. We're very upset about the dilution of the progressive vote, I guess. Or some would say that. I don't know. But the fact that Mr. Dudley is moving precincts that, you know, voted, had the lowest actual voter turnout for him seems kind of opportunistic, to say the least. And then the same thing occurs in the 3rd Ward, which is in the last 2 elections, it's been basically a divided ward. I think if you tally up the votes that between the last 2 elections, it's probably less than 100 votes determined those 2 elections. And so by offloading some of these people, the precincts in the Benton-Stevens area, which identify themselves as being more progressive, where Kespold got absolutely no support, seems to be a good way for both him and Dudley to improve their reelection chances. And it just doesn't feel right. I think most of us feel that way. So.
Okay. Well, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us today,
sure.
Dan, and for calling in.
Well, I hope people can make it to the library on Thursday. Thank you.
For those of you on our panel here in the studio, I mean, did it seem when you started covering this that it would get to a point where there was this much contention over these map lines?
No, definitely not.
I thought maybe, actually. It was my first week here working at the Missourian. I just went to cover one meeting, but I was like, well, this is a pretty interesting issue because it only happens every 10 years. So you never know what might happen. And I didn't think this amount of complexity would be happening.
Right.
I didn't think there'd be any talk of petitions and recalls and this many maps for sure. Yeah. I didn't think.
Carl, your thoughts?
Well, I certainly didn't anticipate any recall, but I will tell you that I anticipated quite a bit of controversy. It always happens in redistricting. Even in nonpartisan redistricting, people simply don't like change. And that's the basic reason. And the political reasons on top of everything else makes it very complicated. And I think Bob Pugh, when he chaired this meeting early on, he was convinced that this might be relatively easy to do, particularly with the technology. But it soon became pretty apparent that there were even divisions within the committee itself in terms of their recommendations. And frankly, I thought that the committee might be deadlocked and not be able to recommend anything at all. And to his credit, Bob Pugh got it on the record to see what the support was. Now, whether or not the council really abides by the recommendation of the committee is another issue entirely.
Okay. I just want to insert some correction here from one of our audience members. In the last election, Griever, Rice, and Dudley were 59 votes and less than 2% apart in that 4th Ward race.
I can tell you what my counts are.
34.96 and slightly over 36.18% were the voting totals on those. Sarah Reed came in a distant third with about 26% was the number here submitted from one of our audience members who I'm guessing by her initials would know.
In 2007, in the 3rd Ward, I won that election in 2007 by 63 votes, and I lost by 54 votes in 2010.
Right. Which actually brings up one of the arguments that has come into the play here is, why not make wards where there wouldn't be such squeaker elections? Why not have the wards be grouped by affinity so that doesn't happen? This is part of what's come up, right, is that why are all these wards so on the edge in terms of the way the votes are going.
Well, that's because gerrymandering as a pejorative tends to give political advantage. And what you really want to do if you fairly redistrict is you want to make as competitive a race as possible within each respective ward. That's the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the guidelines, even in terms of state and national guidelines, use those as not rules, but at least guidelines to suggest that competitiveness is what you really want. You don't want to convey advantage just because of population.
Okay. Karen, Andrew, what do you think the long-term effect of this opposition is going to be? Is it how might it play out in the long term, do you suspect?
Depending on what happens, there could be some hard feelings. I would guess. I mean, this is really, as I said before, I didn't expect it. I guess you have a different perspective, Carl, knowing this city a little bit better than I. But when we first moved forward, there was one map. Bob Pugh had gone forward with Trial A. Wasn't a whole lot of discussion about it. The members of the committee that did speak, they assumed that it would preserve the character of the Central City Ward,
right.
And as we move forward, we're seeing more. There's a little bit more back and forth about some of the issues.
You remember, though, that was interesting because that Plan A, Plan C was one that hit the cutting room floor because it had someone removed them from office, so that was no longer in contention. But the first two plans, A and B, A in fact included Benton Stevens, and B did not. And the committee at that time was one member short because there was some controversy early on to appoint another minority member. And the committee at that time had seven members and more or less by consensus decided to put Plan A, to offer Plan A to the city council and put it before the public to take a look at without even including Plan B.
Mm-hmm.
And sooner or later, enough voices rang out to suggest that, the least that the committee ought to do is put all of the plans out there and see what the public has to say about it. That's what they did, and that's why this got complicated.
And when this process began, a former Mayor Pugh had said to me, this stuck with me too. That Columbia is not Chicago. This is not these wards. These wards
certainly it's not.
For the most part, Columbia has a relatively.
We're
racial,
getting there.
we have a very relatively racially homogenous population, and he didn't expect it. I don't think, and I certainly didn't either, to see some of the divisions that came out. I'll use Trial B as an example. There was a lot of support from the minority men's network behind that one. I think that they even said Trial B is for best, if I remember the slogan correctly. Mm-hmm. But then you had residents coming out of the Oakland Park area of the Second Ward saying, we don't share the type of concerns that First Ward residents have. We worry about flooding from Big Bear Creek. We worry about large-scale development. We're divided by a commercial buffer that is I-70. So, back to your original question, what are the long-term effects of this? I think that a lot of people are finding that they have an identity in their neighborhoods and a lot of an identity in their wards that they may have never realized before.
Mm-hmm. So. We were talking a little bit off there earlier about the charge in the first place of what was being requested of the committee that was appointed and what the actual rules are regarding this. Maybe you could fill us in a little bit, take a few steps back there. What exactly is the city required to do here and what of this is beyond what's actually required?
Well, legally, the city doesn't even really have to redistrict. The charter specifies that it's up to the council on occasion to adjust these numbers if they have. But it has been precedent, and they have always done it every 10 years, so that makes a lot of sense. But then there are just three other guidelines without a few additional ones that the committee itself proposed. When the city council first formed the committee, it offered the same guidelines that came out of the charter, and there were really only three of those. One was to balance the numbers, and I think it talks about just equal in population is the actual language. The other has to do with neighborhood integrity. You don't want to split neighborhoods in half, and you want to maintain the integrity and the boundaries if you can, and minimize boundary adjustments. And the third one, finally, is an issue dealing with compactness and contiguity. Now, of those three, all of the plans satisfy the first one. All the plans essentially have been equalized in terms of population. And all of the plans essentially are now, with the new amendment, contiguous. There was an issue there for the one Plan D, and there are all and the ones that are in they're being considered are all compact. That's less of a legal term than it is kind of a guideline, because compact really means kind of connected but not outrageously connected, I guess you might say. So all of the plans share those too. The one that they don't share is the minimized boundary adjustments. Plan E does minimize boundary adjustments. In fact, it doesn't move any boundaries except the boundary of the first ward into what was formerly the second ward, as it extends Ward 1 West. And Plan D, in fact, not only changes boundaries more than any other, it has a tendency to annex certain areas, that is the Benton Stevens and the Stewart Road area, and then have to substitute other areas on the backside to replace those. So that's why I think people have a suspicion that there might be more to it than just balancing the numbers. So those are really the differences, I think. And in terms of recommendations, it's been pretty clear as well. The committee itself recommended, the only majority recommendation was for Plan E. Plan D was tied. It was deadlocked, so it wasn't recommended. Right. The overwhelming public support is for Plan E in both of the public hearings. And even the Tribune publisher, Hank Waters, has changed his mind, and he's decided that it's too much political baggage to go with any other option than Plan E.
Right. I want to bring another caller into the conversation here. Linda is on the line. Linda, are you there?
Yes.
Great. Thanks for joining the program and for calling in today.
Yes. My question is, my understanding is that quite a lot of money was poured into certain city council and mayoral races by the Chamber of Commerce. And therefore, I'm wondering if the Chamber of Commerce is behind the scenes trying to influence these ward boundaries. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, great. Thanks for calling in with that question. I'll put it to our reporters here. What have you found out in that regard in terms of a connection between Chamber of Commerce or other business interests and what's going on with this redistricting? Has there been any evidence to support that?
I would say not. I mean, the committee has appeared, I mean, at least the way things are carried out in public, that they're acting very independently and bringing their own ideas to the table. With regards to plans A and B, which kind of got this process rolling, those were actually drafted by city planning staffers. There was, as far as I could tell, no ulterior motive that could be located in this. But there is that perception, and this was brought up on Friday's meeting, that there might be an unseen hand somehow influencing this process. But as far as evidence, at least publicly, that hasn't been seen.
Karen, what have you heard? And then we'll let Carl weigh
well,
in
on
this too.
I haven't heard too much. I haven't heard that that's what's happening. I mean, there is maybe a sentiment that that could be happening. I know that, like, Daryl Dudley and Gary Kespel were both endorsed by the Chamber of Commerce in the last election. I mean, that's a connection, but that doesn't mm-hmm. – it's not a connection that's connected to ward redistricting. It's just – I mean, they do and there's people who are on the committee that are members of the Chamber of Commerce, but I wouldn't – I haven't heard that it was proposed like it was an – I don't know how to say it, like a behind-the-scenes kind of thing. I haven't heard anything
right.
about it. I wouldn't.
No, Carl, your perspective
on
this, which is...
There was an interesting development, and that is I actually am a chamber member. I've been a member of the Chamber of Commerce since 2004, and I served and still serve on the Government Affairs Committee. Mr. Monsey's plan, Plan D, was introduced to the Chamber Government Affairs Committee while I was there. He is also a member. I wasn't aware of that at the time, but he is a member of that group. He introduced that plan to the Chamber Government Affairs Committee while I was there, and that was before it was introduced to the public. Now, that's not to suggest that a lot of those folks weren't aware that there was such a plan in existence, too. But that's when that's when I became aware of Plan D, and subsequently then it was released to the public and distributed.
Right. And you mentioned Rob Monsey's, who is a member of the redistricting committee that was appointed,
yes,
right?
He was
put on the committee.
Daryl Dudley's appointee.
Okay. And, you know, in our chat room, this is coming up. I mean, his history is as a political operative.
Yes.
He worked for the governor, Matt Blunt.
Deputy for Matt Blunt, yeah.
So that calls into suspicion a plan that he would have drafted as well, right? I mean, are you are you hearing these concerns? And if so, what are people saying about that?
These concerns have been somewhat long-running, but I don't want to play devil's advocate once again. But when I spoke with Mr. Monsees this morning for my story on this, and I wasn't able to get this into the story, he did point out to me that Dr. Wiley Miller, one of the appointees, the at-large appointee that was appointed later, he himself is he's involved with Democratic groups. The fact that he works with those types of groups has never been highlighted. However, the fact that Mr. Monsees has been, you know, for all intents and purposes, a Republican operative, that seems to be getting more attention. Whether or not that's going to affect his decisions, you know, helping to redraw a nonpartisan ward map, I mean, I guess the perception is alive, but whether or not he's actually doing that in practice, I mean.
And when you talked to him today, did he offer any other arguments in favor of Plan D, any other reasons why that makes sense besides the infrastructure thing that we've heard?
No, same arguments as before. I mean, his original argument to me was that the arguments that apply to Trial 5, the 2001 similar proposal, it should apply to this as well, that it would make a stronger central city ward. So.
Right. So basically, the big question is Plan D a politicized plan? I mean, that's what everyone's asking, right?
Depends on who you ask, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. In terms of some of the other issues that are coming up around this, why not just go with Plan E? And I mean, the council hasn't made a decision. The council will still consider all these things. Is it likely that they'll just go with Plan E?
I think that may be where it winds up. I suspect that there is support that the council is split, and that the mayor may make the decision. But after all, there are a couple of things that Plan E has in its favor. One is its simplicity. I mean, they all satisfy the numbers, and they all satisfy the compact and contiguity issue now. Plan E has the benefit of minimizing the disturbance, so to speak. So the mayor ran his campaign as mayor on the basis of neighborhood integrity. And so I suspect that that's very important to him. And given that that there's overwhelming public support for Plan E, and that the committee, in fact, that's their only recommendation, I suspect that that will weigh heavily in the decision.
You mentioned this at the beginning of the show, actually, that there were several First Ward neighborhood associations that had come with a plan of their own known as Trial J. It was unofficial, citizen-generated, but extremely similar to Trial E. And as far as I could tell from a lot of the meetings, there was very, very little criticism about Trial E. I will present the counter argument to it. Once again, playing the bad guy here, I suppose. A lot of the resistance to Trial E, namely from members of the committee who voted against it and council members who have expressed concerns about it, they feel as if the denser, older neighborhoods in the central city just aren't compatible with the type of development and the type of neighborhoods you see out in West Columbia. I mean, we're putting together one ward where there's going to be Columbia Mall, you know, with the downtown district, and in their minds, they don't see very much connection between the two, between this brand new development we have on Stadium Boulevard with these old neighborhoods we have down toward the center of the city.
Right.
So
I want to come back to that. Before we do, I want to bring up a couple of comments from the chat room about that conversation about Wiley Miller and Rob Monsees. Two of our chatters have pointed out that while Wiley Miller worked on behalf of Democratic causes, he was never actually paid to do that as a profession, whereas Rob Monsees, that was his full-time occupation.
That is true.
So just to clarify that there, I think that's a good point from our audience here. In terms of putting those together, those neighborhoods around that sort of expand westward, I mean, it's going from Clinkscales, which is where the Arc is. I mean, we're still looking at sort of 1950s ranch houses all the way out to Stadium in that area. As you get toward the mall and then slightly beyond that is not that much newer. I mean, have people in those neighborhoods voiced opposition to becoming part of the First Ward?
I think there was a concern brought up by Mary Ratliff of the local chapter.
Mary Ratliff was the only person. She lives way out, and that was one of the exceptions was to split that park.
Park DeVille
neighborhood.
That's right.
But the Plan E also, incidentally, it might be worth noting, also puts one neighborhood association back together again, the one that straddles West Broadway. But yes, Mary Ratliff had mentioned that she favored actually Plan B, I think it was,
yes,
rather than Plan
A. Yes, that is correct,
okay.
Yeah.
But that was the only, as far as I know, that was the only.
We have someone on the line who also thinks Plan E is a bad idea. John Clark, you're on the line with us.
Right. Well, I know you're nearing the end. Unfortunately, I had other things to do earlier.
No worries. We're glad that you're joining the conversation now. We just have a few minutes left. You are opposed to Plan E, is that right?
Well, not only that, I was the principal conceiver of Trial 5 10 years ago, and Mr. Monsees read all my stuff and made sense, and he updated that approach. So I believe in a strong central city ward as a base for getting much more political attention paid to central city concerns, such as much bigger budgets for code enforcement, bigger matching funds for block grant money from local resources, and actually more money for the police department so we might be able to actually have community policing. And so, first of all, I attended all of the ward reapportionment committee meetings, and the report to the council did not recommend any option. It basically gave the information and five options and a straw poll taken around those. So there was no recommendation. Secondly, Trial E just clearly is going in the direction of undoing the concept of building a central city ward as a way to get more attention to central city issues. Trial E simply goes in the wrong direction in that it's not as bad as Jay would have been, but basically it's giving up. I'm not ready to give up on creating a central city ward, and down the road more than one central city ward. Of course, I completely disagree with Carl's whole notion about maximum diversity in each ward. I think that is basically, Terry Smith's outline said, if everybody's responsible for central city wards issues, nobody is, and that has been the effect for 40 years. It's not that people didn't do some things for the central city issues. Notice I say central city, right, Not first ward.
Okay, so just to clarify, John, just to clarify and make sure we've got this, and here's the philosophical divide, right? Your belief is that having one person who's specifically advocating on the city council for the central city issues would be a stronger way to go than having lots of council members have that as part of their wards.
Given that we have only six wards, that's the best we can do. Now, I do believe the myth of the multiple votes that Carl believes in and Mike Martin believes in is a myth.
Okay.
They cannot present one real issue where, in fact, wards, where the representative was trying to represent central city issues and edge of the city growth issues, where actually the central city got enough attention. It just isn't there. Yeah. It was a nice idea in 1972 when they created the six wards in Wedgling. It just has not worked out that way.
Okay, I'm going to have to stop you there, John. I'm going to have to stop you because we are unfortunately out of time for today's conversation. So
thank you for all of this.
I appreciate that you called in. I appreciate our panelists being here and all of the people who called and the people in our chat room who helped keep us honest today. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. I'd like to thank our guests, Columbia Daily Tribune reporter Andrew Denny, Columbia Missourian reporter Karen Miller, and former Third Ward City Council Representative Carl Scala. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday. You can join us each Monday afternoon by listening to KBIA or by going online to kbia.org. Not only will you be able to watch a video feed of the program and submit your questions during the show, but you can also add comments on the website to today's program in a running stream and keep this conversation going. We'll help you do that. We're here every week. This program is a project of RJI and KBIA. Today's show was produced by Raymond Tungekar and Janet Saidi. Travis McMillan is our technical director with production assistance from Joe Deutschman. Pat Akers is our audio producer. Executive producers Mike Dunn, Mike McKean. I'm Ruben Stern. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week.